Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the third canto, and it's chapter 6, text 34. Ete varnak svadharmena yajanti svagurum harin shraddhayatma vishudhyartham yajatak sahavrutti bhi ete varnak svadharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishudhyartham yajjatak sahavrutti bhi. Please chant. Iti varna sadharmena yanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishudhyartham yajatak sahavritti bhi iti varnasa dharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishudhyartham yajatak sahavritti bhi iti varnasa dharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishuddhyartham yajatak sahavritti. Ladies, please. Iti varnasa dharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishuddhyartham yajati svagavritti bhi iti varnaksa dharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishuddhyartham yajati svagavritti bhi iti varnaksa dharmena yajanti svagurum harim shraddhayatma vishuddhyartham yajatak sahavritti bhi ete all these varnaha orders of society svadharmena by one's own occupational duties. Yajanti, worship, swagurum, with the spiritual master. Harim, the supreme personality of Godhead. Shraddhaya, with faith and devotion. Atma, self. Vishuddhi-artham, for purifying. Yat, from whom? Jataha, born. Saha, along with. Vritti bhihi, occupational duty. Translation. All these different social divisions are born with their occupational duties and living conditions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, for unconditional life and self-realization, one has to worship the Supreme Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. Please repeat. All these different social divisions are born with their occupational duties and living conditions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, for unconditional life and self-realization, one has to worship the Supreme Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada's purport: since they are born from different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord in his gigantic form, all living entities and all parts of the entire universe are supposed to be eternal servitors of the Supreme Body. Every part of our own body, such as the mouth, hands, thighs, and legs, is meant to render service to the whole. That is their constitutional position. In subhuman life, the living entities are not conscious of this constitutional position, but in the human form of life, they are supposed to know this through the system of the varnas, the social orders. As above mentioned, the Brahmana is the spiritual master of all the orders of society, and thus Brahminical culture, culminating in the transcendental service of the Lord, is the basic principle for purifying the soul. In conditioned life, the soul is under the impression that he can become the Lord of the universe, and the last point of this misconception is to think oneself the supreme. The foolish conditioned soul does not take into account that the Supreme cannot be conditioned by Maya or illusion. If the Supreme were to become conditioned by illusion, where would be his supremacy? In that case, Maya or illusion would be the Supreme. Therefore, because the living entities are conditioned, they cannot be supreme. The actual position of the conditioned soul is explained in this verse. All the conditioned souls are impure due to contact with the material energy in three modes of nature. Therefore, it is necessary that they purify themselves under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, who not only is a Brahmana by qualification, but must also be a Vaishnava. The only self-purifying process mentioned herein is to worship the Lord under the recognized method, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. That is the natural way of purification, and no other method is recommended as bona fide. The other methods of purification may be helpful to come to this stage of life, but ultimately one has to come to this last point before he attains actual perfection. Bhagavad Gita 7:19 confirms this truth as follows: Bahunang janmanam ante jnanavan mang prapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti sa mahatma sudulabha. And the translation of that verse of the Bhagavad Gita is: after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshusum Miditam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the translation again: all these different social divisions are born with their occupational duties and living conditions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, for unconditional life and self-realization, one has to worship the Supreme Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. So I have several goals this morning. One is to deliver a class that is scripturally accurate, also something that's meaningful to everyone here, but also I want to get everyone out the door early. That way you can appreciate the class more, baby, okay? So in today's class, we'll cover four basic topics. Number one, the symmetry between Krishna himself, his universal form, and the human social body. Number two, why should I even think about the universal form? Number three, how do the modes of nature affect me? And number four, improving my relationship with the holy name. So part one, the symmetry between Krishna, his universal form, and the human social body. So the first point I'd like to make is that the Bhagavatam provides us with a wonderfully symmetrical and organized view of the entirety of existence, both spiritual and material. There's the Supreme Lord in his eternal Satchit-Ananda form. This form manifests the Virat Rupa, the temporary universal form, which is the created cosmos. And within the cosmos, there's the social body of civilized human beings. The original form of Krishna, his universal form, and the social body all possess a head, arms, belly, and legs. In the social body, these divisions correspond to the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, or the intellectuals, the administrators, the mercantile class, and workers. And again, universal symmetry. In today's purport, Prabhupada also mentions another organizing principle. Just as every part of our physical body renders service to the whole, similarly, all constituent parts of the social body render service to the brahmanas and Vaishnavas, who represent the whole because they're the most qualified to guide the society in the process of pleasing the Supreme Lord. And if all parts of the social body perform their occupational duties for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, then society will be peaceful and prosperous, and in the end, everyone's perfection is assured. But I was lamenting that if we lack a basic understanding of this universal symmetry, then the totality of existence becomes empty and bleak because there's no rhyme or reason to anything, no organizing principle. Oddly enough, the atheists, despite all the symmetry they see around them, consider everything random and accidental. But atheism as a philosophy is completely unsupported by any system of logic. But if you're desperately trying to convince yourself that everything exists for your enjoyment, you'll invent any insane belief system to justify it. So part two, why should I even think about the universal form? It's natural to ask if our goal is to love Krishna, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, why do we have to spend so much time hearing about this fantastical form of Krishna known as the Virat Rupa, which is sometimes referred to as imaginary and is the inferior energy of the Lord? But Prabhupada addresses this question many times in his writings. For example, in the purport of the Bhagavatam 4:23:16, he writes, quote, "It is important to know thoroughly the process of creation as it applies to this cosmic manifestation. One should know the process of creation and should meditate upon the creative process inversely," note that word inversely, "and thus become free from material contamination," end quote. So why does Prabhupada say meditate on the creative process inversely? So in this part of the Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma is addressing Narada, and it's explaining to Narada how the universal elements are created from subtle to gross. Lord Brahma says that from sky, air is created. From air, fire is created. From fire, water is created. And from water, earth is created. Again, from subtle to gross. Now, similarly, the living entity enters the womb of a mother, and Prabhupada uses a wonderfully descriptive term. He says the living entity collects the elements of his gross body from the totality of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Again, from subtle to gross. So when Prabhupada states that we should meditate upon the creative process inversely, the best I can see it, he's stating that we can understand how matter covers us by understanding the process of becoming uncovered or freed from matter. For example, if we have a delicate Swiss watch, we can understand how it works by dismantling it and reassembling it. In other words, by getting to know it. If we can understand how we become covered by material elements, we can also envision the reverse and thus become freed from that covering. So I'm sorry about the philosophical speculation here, but that's the best I could do. So chapter 1, verse 54 of the Adi Lila is a restatement of one of the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, first of all, one must understand the relative truth to actually know the absolute truth. And number two, the absolute truth is substance, and the relative truth depends upon the absolute for its existence. Whatever one sees here has its substance in the absolute. End quote. Again, another confirmation that we need to know the relative in order to know the absolute. And finally, verse 11 of the Sri Ishupanishad states, Vidyang cha vidyang cha yas tad vedo bayang saha avidyaya mrityung tirtva vidyayang mrityam ashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So, part three, how the modes of nature affect me. We were just talking about the need to understand material nature, and part of that is appreciating how much I'm in her tight grip. I'll, with your permission, speak personally for a moment. One thing that has helped me gauge my spiritual whereabouts is appreciating from moment to moment and day to day how the modes of nature control me. If I look back at my early days in Krishna consciousness, I see myself as heavily invested in the mode of darkness, tamagun. And if I look at myself today, frankly, not a lot has changed, but at least I can see the influence of tamagun more clearly. You see, part of the process, part of the problem, is the very quality of the mode of darkness. In Bhagavad Gita 14:18, Krishna describes the mode of darkness as jaganya, abominable. Now, I think that anything that I've created is wonderful, but Krishna describes tamagun as abominable. Tamagun is so contrary to the nature of the soul that it absolutely no good comes from it. Now, on the contrary, if I'm invested in the mode of passion, for example, at least I can dovetail that passion in Krishna service and try to accomplish something great to spread Krishna consciousness. But in tamagun, forget it. I become angry, lazy, depressed, easily defeated, hopeless, fault-finding. And if I engage in fault-finding in the community of devotees, I slam the brakes on my spiritual advancement. We must fight this tendency stringently because fault-finding tramples my devotional creature, listen to that, creeper, very efficiently. So what's the way out of this? Part four, improving my relationship with the Holy Name. Let's talk about the chanting of the Holy Name. If I live in the temple, I have many devotional activities that fill my day. And in one sense, all these activities are equally important. Prabhupada said that if we're polishing the floor, we should see the floor as non-different from Krishna. However, when we receive first initiation, there's only one thing we actually vow to do, and that's chant a minimum of 16 rounds. So you could say that all of our devotional activities are equally important, but chanting our rounds is more equal. So recently I've begun to examine my attitude toward the Holy Names to see if any of the following attitudes apply to me. For example, am I relieved? Am I relieved when I'm done chanting my rounds? Or am I stressed or resentful if it's late and I have, say, 6 rounds left? Do I use the expression, "Oh, I finished my rounds"? Or do my rounds sound like I'm calling the neighborhood cat? Here, kitty, 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 kitty. Or do I chant a half round of "here, kitty" and not even realize it? So those are some examples of my rounds on a bad day. What about on a good day? Well, if my mind is reasonably quiet, which is rare, I try to concentrate on the pronunciation of the names and hear that pronunciation, even relish each syllable. In other words, I try to serve the names attentively. My godbrother, Vaisheshika Prabhu, said that more than serving Krishna, we're actually trying to serve his holy names. So sometimes I sincerely beg the holy names to engage me in their service. Since my chanting is at the offensive stage, I sometimes pray to the holy names to lift me up from that platform and allow me to chant without offense. Another approach I take is to beg the holy names to reform my character. In our journey through millions of species and billions of creations, we've had trillions of bodies. But do you know how many minds we've had? Just one. Traveling from one body to the next, our mind sees something as attractive and another thing as repulsive, but it's the same mind throughout my entire sojourn, and therefore it's very difficult to let go of my mind. So I can pray, "Dear holy names, please soften my steel-framed heart so that it becomes a fitting residence for your lotus feet." Another approach is to beg the holy names to give me the strength to stay on the path. Why? Because the more I chant, the more the holy names churn up my anartas, my neuroses, fears, addictions, doubts, resentments, insecurities. Because of this, although I find that gradually I chant with more reverence, it also gets more challenging. So I can pray, "Dear holy names, I don't expect the path to get easier, but please give me the courage to always follow the instructions of my spiritual master." The first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the so-called good qualities of this age of Kali. Mandaksa mandamatayo mandabhagya hyupadrutaha. Quote, "The people of this age are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed." Because people are mad after sense gratification, you could say that the principal disease of this age is unrestricted sense gratification. But I believe there's a disease which underlies that. And what's that? Well, I believe it's impersonalism. Didn't the godfather of impersonalism, Sripad Sankaracharya, appear in this age? Impersonalism manifests in practically every aspect of my life. And guess what? Impersonalism also bleeds over into my attitude towards the holy names. Instead of feeling gratitude toward the holy names, I treat the personal name of the personality of Godhead impersonally. Well, how ironic is that? Impersonalism is the denial of feelings. But I want to develop some feelings toward the holy name. The more I invest my feelings into my chanting, the less rote it will be, the less impersonal, the less offensive. And isn't that what we're trying to do? Develop a personal relationship with Krishna by developing a personal relationship with his holy names. So how can I counter my impersonal tendencies? Well, by leading a regulated life, by seeking good association, and by throwing myself at the feet of the holy names and entreating them to please reform my character. In this way, I can gradually combat the disease of impersonalism and begin forming a personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in summary, in today's class, we took a brief look at the symmetry between Krishna, his universal form, and the social body. We took a look at why I should know the universal form, at how the modes of nature affect me, and how to improve my relationship with the holy name. So I think I've accomplished my goal. Well, I don't know about the scripturally correct part of it, but at least I'm able to get everyone out of the door early. Unless someone has a desperate question, which I'm sure I'm probably not qualified to respond to. Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Everything what you said is completely perfect.
Thank you.
But my question is, wine sometimes dry, you know, dry when I try to understand philosophy, you know, some philosophical point from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't attract me. You know, can you explain a little bit more about that? You already said everything, but can you elaborate a little bit?
So then the question
it's just dry, it's too much for my mind. It's, cannot go into that.
So then the question is, why do sometimes or some parts of Prabhupada's books or our philosophy seem dry to you?
Yeah, especially about like creation, how it's created, you know, and I'm not so much attracted. Why is it like that?
So I would say be patient with yourself. And the other thing I do is I do read Shastra every day. Frankly, I don't read that long, but I read what I feel I can try to understand. But then I seek out that which I find particularly relishable. And for me, it's reading Prabhupada's pastimes. And there's so many wonderful books by disciples who had direct contact with him or prolonged contact with him by relishing the grace and beauty and divinity of the pure devotee, particularly someone at the level of Srila Prabhupada. Personally, that's how I find a little bit of a taste. So I would urge you, again, be patient. Because we're under the material influence, because we're not free of the modes of material nature, sometimes, you know, we're flowing with our japa, and sometimes we're flowing with the kirtan, and sometimes we're flowing, in your case, with book distribution. And sometimes, and this is the term I use for myself, is that sometimes I have to grind out my rounds. But Krishna appreciates that, you know, at least I'm trying, at least I'm grinding out my rounds, because that's the best I can do under the circumstances. Does that answer just a little bit? Thank you very much. Oh, Prabhu, go ahead. We have one more question. Yeah, bring the mic, please.
Question about the chanting japa. Thank you for the class. I was inquiring about sincerity. So when you chant, can you explain more about that subject quickly?
So when we're chanting our rounds, our japa, you're asking about sincerity. Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, how do I be sincere? And he said, by being sincere. In other words, how do I become sincere? By invoking sincerity. For example, chanting with love is a bit above my qualification. But trying to invoke gratitude, someone described gratitude as a gateway emotion. It's more accessible. So if I can chant with gratitude, I'll feel sincere. Believe me, if I can chant with gratitude, I will feel sincere. Okay? And just keep at it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All glories to Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bol.